Welcome. We're here to give you the critical info you need, straight up, no messing around. Today, we are really getting into a topic that's super common, but honestly still causes a lot of confusion. Vaginal candidiasis, you probably know it as a yeast infection.
And the numbers, they really tell the story here. Something like 3 out of every 4 women will face this at least once. The big issue is sorting through all the information out there and, well, avoiding self-misdiagnosis.
Exactly. So our mission today is pretty clear. Cut through that noise. We want to give you a solid toolkit, basically, so you can figure out, okay, is this something I can handle over the counter? Or, and this is key, when do I absolutely need to call a doctor? Think of it as your shortcut to making smart decisions fast.
Okay, so let's start with what's actually going on. It's a fungus we're talking about, right? Usually Candida albicans. And it's totally natural. It lives on your skin, in your mouth, digestive tract, general area. It's meant to be there. It exists in this kind of delicate balance with all the good bacteria.
Right, but then that balance gets thrown off. Maybe you took antibiotics. Maybe hormones are shifting. Maybe blood sugar is high. And suddenly, the fungus has an advantage. It starts multiplying like crazy. And that's what causes the infection, the symptoms, all the misery.
Precisely. And if you mistake that fungal overgrowth for, say, a bacterial thing like BV, you end up using the wrong medicine. You waste time, feel uncomfortable for longer. That's why getting the ID right is step one, identifying a yeast infection and when to triage.
Okay, let's build that yeast infection checklist then. What are the definite signs that scream fungus versus, you know, something else entirely?
Well, the first and often the most persistent sign is itching. Sometimes really intense itching inside or around the vagina. Then there's often burning when you urinate. But it's important to note, that's usually the urine hitting skin that's already irritated and inflamed, not necessarily a UTI. You might also see redness, some swelling, and sex can become uncomfortable.
Okay, but you mentioned imposters. What's the real giveaway? The symptom that helps you say, ah, oh, okay, this looks like yeast.
This is really the key identifier. You need to lock this description away. We're talking about discharge that is thick, pale, and noticeably lumpy. People often say it looks like cottage cheese. And this is critical. It typically has very little or absolutely no odor.
Okay, you really emphasize little or no odor. But wait, if someone's worried, maybe any smell seems like a problem. How crucial is that cottage cheese, no smell combo?
Oh, it's absolutely vital. Look, there might be a very mild, sort of normal bodily scent, nothing offensive, but any strong, foul, or fishy smell, that is a massive clue you're dealing with bacteria, like bacterial vaginosis or maybe a parasite. Not yeast. The absence of a strong odor is almost as telling as the texture.
Got it. That's super clear. So if the symptoms match that checklist and they're fairly mild, maybe an OTC treatment is okay, but where's the cutoff? When should you stop buying that 3-day cream for the 5th time this year and hoping it works this time?
Right. We need to triage immediately, like stop and get medical help if any of these 5 things are true for you. Number one, this is the very first time you ever had these symptoms. You need a proper diagnosis first. Get that baseline. Number two, the symptoms feel really severe, way worse than usual maybe, or they just aren't getting any better after, say, 2 or 3 days of trying an OTC treatment.
And the other three are more about your overall health picture, right?
Exactly. So number three, you're pregnant. Always see a doctor if you're pregnant. Four, you get these infections recurrently. That means like 4 or more confirmed yeast infections within 1 year. And five, you're managing a health condition that impacts your immune system. Think diabetes, AIDS, or if you're undergoing chemotherapy.
Makes total sense. Those situations definitely need a professional eye. Okay, logistics. If you do need care quickly, how do you choose? Telehealth, urgent care.
Telehealth can be a great option, really practical. If your symptoms are mild to moderate, and you know what a yeast infection feels like because you've had a diagnosed one before, and you don't have any of those complicating factors we just listed, like pregnancy or diabetes, a doctor or nurse practitioner can often assess and prescribe online quickly.
But if things feel more serious.
Yeah, if the symptoms are intense, like really bad swelling, severe burning, a lot of redness, or, and this is a big one, if you suddenly develop a fever, you need urgent care.
Mm-hmm.
Fever isn't typical for a straightforward yeast infection. It could mean something more serious is going on, maybe a bacterial infection spreading. Honestly, if you're ever really in doubt, especially if it's the first time, going in person is just the safer way to go.
Okay, now for what seems like the biggest hurdle, mistaking it for something else. I thought this section on the lookalikes was so important because, wow, the treatments are completely different. Let's really nail down how to tell these conditions apart.
Yeah, this is where things get tricky. The main mistake is just assuming any vaginal irritation or weird discharge automatically equals yeast. It doesn't. We need to look hard at the warning signs, the things that are really not typical for a standard yeast infection.
So if it doesn't fit that cottage cheese picture, what are the usual suspects the sources warn about?
Okay, let's talk the big three players often confused. Yeast itself, bacterial vaginosis, or BV, and trichomoniasis, often called Trich. You've got fungus, bacteria, and a parasite. Three totally different causes needing three totally different treatments.
Right. So if someone thinks it's yeast, but it's actually BV, how do they know?
Okay, BV is all about a bacterial imbalance. The discharge is usually quite different, thin, maybe watery, and often grayish or off-white. But the dead giveaway, a strong, fishy smell, often gets worse after sex. Remember, yeast is thick, white, lumpy, and usually odorless. BV needs antibiotics. Antifungals won't touch it.
Got it. Fishy smell, thin discharge, think bacteria. What about trichomoniasis then?
So Trich is different again. It's an STI caused by a tiny parasite. It can cause itching and irritation, yeah, but the discharge is the clue. It's often described as frothy, maybe yellow-green in color, and it usually comes with a pretty strong, unpleasant odor, too, if you see yellow-green and frothiness. You need to get tested for STIs and get specific anti-parasite medication, like, right away.
Okay, those seem clearer. But wait, there was this one thing in the sources that really threw me. Are you telling me there's a condition with a discharge that looks just like yeast? Thick, white, itchy, but it's caused by too much good bacteria? Seriously?
That's the sneakiest one. Cytolytic vaginosis, or CV, is the ultimate mimic. Looks like yeast, feels like yeast, white, thick, discharge, irritation. But it's actually caused by an overgrowth of lactobacillus. Those are the normally healthy bacteria that keep things in check.
Wow. So if you treat CV with an antifungal, you're making it worse. You're killing off the good guys you actually need more of, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're doing the opposite of what's needed. CV usually needs specialized testing to confirm. Treatment might involve things like baking soda baths or special suppositories to reduce the acidity caused by too much lactobacillus. It just hammers home why getting that first diagnosis right is so critical, especially if OTC yeast treatments keep failing you.
Okay, one last thing on telling things apart. What if someone has itching and redness, but like zero discharge, nothing at all?
That usually points away from infection, actually, more towards a skin issue. Could be contact dermatitis, reaction to a new soap, detergent, even lube. Or sometimes chronic skin conditions like eczema or psoriasis can show up in the genital area. You get the redness, the itching, but not that characteristic discharge of an infection.
So we know how to spot the enemy, hopefully. Let's talk about the weapons. For those straightforward, maybe occasional yeast infections, what's the standard approach?
For the simple, uncomplicated cases, the standard is antifungals. Usually a short course is enough. Maybe 3 to 7 days. You've got a couple of main choices. There are over-the-counter creams or suppositories, things with miconazole or clotrimazole, or sometimes a doctor might prescribe a single pill, like sulconazole. The key thing is you should start feeling better pretty quickly, like within a day or two.
Okay. But what about those tougher cases, the complicated ones, or if someone hits that 4 times a year mark we talked about?
That's when we need to dig a bit deeper. It often requires a more customized plan. Maybe longer treatment courses, sometimes combination therapy. Doctors might prescribe, say, multiple doses of oral fluconazole over several weeks, or maybe a 7 to 14 day course of a stronger vaginal cream, or even boric acid suppositories. And importantly, the doctor isn't just treating the current infection. They're actively looking for why it keeps happening. Is it underlying blood sugar issues? Hormones? A resistant yeast strain?
And I want to make sure we bring up that warning about home remedies, the one from Dr. Carpenter in the sources, because, you know, the internet has ideas.
Yes, that's crucial. Dr. Carpenter was really clear. Home treatment is only okay if you're absolutely 100% sure it's just a simple, mild yeast infection you've had diagnosed before. Her biggest warning was about using really concentrated stuff directly. She specifically mentioned things like tea tree oil or undiluted oregano oil. These are incredibly potent. They can cause nasty chemical burns or severe irritation if you don't dilute them properly or if you apply them incorrectly.
Ouch. Okay, so if someone does want to try something gentle at home, what are the safer bets?
Stick with things actually designed for vaginal use. Boric acid suppositories are one option, formulated for insertion. Or even simpler, maybe a small amount of plain unsweetened yogurt or a bit of coconut oil applied carefully, perhaps with an applicator. The aim should be soothing relief, not waging chemical warfare.
Good advice. Okay, let's talk about specific groups where treatment really needs careful handling. Pregnancy first.
Right. Pregnancy hormones basically roll out the welcome mat for yeast. Infections are more common. But, and this is vital oral antifungals, like fluconazole, the pill, are generally not considered safe during pregnancy. So you absolutely must talk to your OBGYN or midwife. Topical treatments, the creams and suppositories, are usually the go-to safe option during pregnancy.
And what about for people managing diabetes?
Diabetes. High blood sugar is like pouring gasoline on a fire when it comes to use. Candida loves sugar. So if blood glucose isn't well managed, it creates this perfect environment for yeast to just thrive. This often means infections are more frequent and they're way harder to get rid of. Treatment might need to be longer or stronger or repeated because a standard short course just can't beat back the yeast when there's so much sugar fueling it. Honestly, for diabetics, getting blood sugar under control is the number one way to prevent these infections in the first place.
That connection is so important. Lastly, what if someone just ignores it, hopes it goes away? What's the risk?
Well, at the very least, you're looking at ongoing, probably worsening discomfort. It really impacts quality of life. Plus, untreated infections mess with that delicate vaginal balance for longer, increasing the chances it'll just come back again soon. And while it's rare in generally healthy people, the sources do stress this. In people with weakened immune systems, maybe due to HIV or active chemo, a neglected yeast infection can potentially become invasive. That means the fungus gets into the bloodstream, spreads to organs. It becomes a life-threatening emergency called invasive candidiasis. So acting reasonably quickly is important for comfort, yes, but also for safety.
Okay, quick summary. If you think it's a yeast infection, what's the number one clue?
That discharge. Thick, white, lumpy, looks like cottage cheese, and crucially, has little to no smell.
But if you notice a strong odor or a weird color like yellow-green, or you suddenly get a fever.
That's your signal. Stop self-treating. Time to see a doctor. It's likely something else going on.
And the timeline check. Tried an OTC treatment. If things aren't better after 3 days, or if it drags on past a week.
Yep. Get medical advice. Don't just keep trying the same thing if it's clearly not working.
You know, we spent this whole deep dive focused on this tiny fungus, Candida. But the fact that infections can become recurrent, that cycle, it really opens up a bigger picture, doesn't it? About your body's whole internal environment. We learned that repeat infections often happen because that natural bacterial balance gets disrupted. Maybe frequent antibiotics did it, or because of underlying health stuff like those blood sugar issues.
Exactly. Which leads us to the final thought we want to leave you with.
So here it is. If you find yourself stuck in that recurring yeast infection loop, maybe the real deep dive isn't just about the fungus itself. Maybe it's about looking into your overall internal balance. Is there an underlying lifestyle factor? Maybe diet, maybe stress. Or a subtle health issue like blood sugar that you didn't realize was a factor. Could investigating that be the key to actually preventing it long term?
Something definitely worth thinking about.